Yeah, that's Get Ready by Brother Jeffrey Allen Scott. We're going to sign out with him, and the Lord bless you. Keep the faith. Hope to see you next week here on 30 Minutes. All right. Have a great week.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
New year, new KBOO. Thank you to everyone who contributed and supported us during our KBOO Fights Back end of year campaign. With help from our community, we exceeded our $75,000 goal and will be able to continue bringing you grassroots independent community radio.
Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. These days, it's not unusual to feel disconnected or out of alignment. If you're seeking a sense of belonging and deeper clarity in your life, our guest offers a strong path forward. True fulfillment emerges through connection, she says, to yourself, to the divine, sacred others, and to the living earth. Specifically, she notes, quote, "This field of loving, opulent abundance we call nature, that beats your heart, breathes your lungs, and circles this planet around the sun, has made a home for you, too. It's called your living center. All you need to do is rest there." Boy, this sounds relaxing. Our guest today is Ajaya Summers. Ajaya is the founder of Core Embodiment, a psycho-spiritual somatic methodology devoted to restoring embodied coherence, relational intelligence, and the living presence of the soul within the body. Her work integrates developmental trauma healing, nervous system regulation, and somatic mystery school practices into a deeply experiential path of embodied awakening. Ajaya is a certified biodynamic cranial sacral integration teacher, a NARM practitioner, and that stands for neuroaffective relational model, which is a type of therapy, and an authorized continuum teacher. For more than three decades now, she has supported thousands of people in reclaiming vitality, true intimacy, and authentic presence through retreats, trainings, and immersive group containers. She has a book forthcoming entitled Awake Attachment, which explores how secure relational bonding and spiritual realization arise through the same embodied developmental process. All of her programs are grounded in science, expanded through devotional practice, and made real through direct experience. And I can attest to that as having experienced some of Ajaya's work myself. Well, hello, Ajaya, and welcome to the Pathway Show.
Thank you, Paulo. I'm delighted to be here with you.
And we're so honored to have you. Well, why don't we start out by defining core embodiment?
Lovely. I spent a lot of my early life in the longing, you could say, the being a seeker around this inquiry of who am I and what is it to fully embody the truth of who I am and this whole business of awakening. And after many years of doing a lot of more traditional meditation practice, I started to see through the study of embryology, as well as some other bodies of work, that there was a bodily location. You know, it was like I could have these peak experiences, let's say, on a long meditation retreat. But then I would come back to my life, and it was like there was a gap between what I had had a direct experience of and then how I could really live it. And so my path led me to discover that there are these three main fulcrums in the body, the hara, the belly center, which includes the root, as well as the heart center, and then the center of the brain. In Taoist traditions, they'd be called the three dantians. And there's people like Judith Blackstone, who's a non-dual psychotherapist who made similar discoveries, and others out there, that these are the fulcrums, if you will, that we can really discover a deeper intimacy with who we are and live from that seat of awareness. And so core embodiment is really my synthesis of, through the study of embryology, through biodynamic cranial sacral, and also the practice of continuum, as well as some of these other meditative paths, sort of where they all started to come together, different maps that revealed the same territory. And eventually I developed a practice that incorporates all these different maps into an experiential practice, really to give people a way that they could be empowered in accessing this space, that it wasn't just this fleeting, like maybe I'll find it, maybe I won't kind of relationship, but something that was actually accessible, fairly easy to learn, and something that you could cultivate over time, that you could continue to deepen in. So I call it a psycho-spiritual somatic integrative practice. It's a big jumble of words, but really it is incorporating all of these different dimensions of our intelligence.
So you teach people this practice, or you perform a treatment on them involving it, or both?
Essentially, it's a core practice. It's a way of attuning to oneself through your own touch, through your own sound vibration, and through the alchemy of where you bring your attention to meet your touch and your sound. One of the things through my background in continuum is that we understand that where we have dense tissue and where we might be dissociated or disconnected or unable to feel, if we bring our touch there, there's more chance that we're going to actually have a feeling, right? You know, it's like when someone touches you or you touch yourself, now you have a location where you can land your attention. When we bring sound vibration from our internal body space, we connect with that unique frequency of who we are. So the meeting of touch, the meeting of our sound, and the meeting of our awareness all come together. And in core embodiment, there's specific locations, the hara, the belly center, the heart, the center of the head specifically, that have sounds that when you produce them, they actually help you feel in those locations. So there's a sound for the belly, there's a sound for the heart, there's a sound for the center of the head, and we bring our hands to those same locations. And then there's an embryological movement that's really the original movement, a breathing motion that formed us in utero. And so for many people, when we start to bring all of this together, it's very familiar. It's like your most native primary language, precognitive, pre-language that we felt in the womb, where we originally have this template of feeling connected, feeling whole. So it's a very experiential way to reconnect with that intelligence.
Okay. Now, you have described the core as the place where the soul actually becomes inhabited in the body. And that's an interesting concept, and I wonder if you can unpack that for us.
I'd love to, yeah. Well, in, you know, for me, I'll just say that as much as I've been passionate about many different spiritual traditions and psychological frames, I would say that the study of embryology, the actual study of the development of the human organism, has been like the golden thread of my own awakenings, really. And so in studying the development of the human system through biodynamic cranial primarily, we have an understanding of what we call ignitions. So conception, the coming together of the sperm and the ovum, is the first ignition, let's say, of the invisible or the infinite coming down into matter, into biological consciousness. And so that ignition is the first moment in which you could say there's an incarnating of the soul. There's another ignition when we implant into the uterine wall of the mother, and the midline starts to develop, and the organization of all of our primary vital organs starts to come forward. There's an ignition there. There's an ignition when the heart starts beating. There's an ignition at birth. And an ignition is really a step down of the soul's intelligence that starts to inform the biology. So this is unique, I think, to traditions like Rudolf Steiner, which biodynamic cranial derives a lot of its understanding from. For myself, in studying the map of embryological development, I started to have direct experiences or memories of this into my own experience. And so I became very passionate about imparting this to others, because I realized that many of us are really bereft of a sense of our origin, of where we come from, and the miracle, really, that it is, the miracle forces that are involved to actually incarnate and come into form and have a human expression. So there's ignitions of the soul ongoingly, beyond birth, every time we have an initiatory experience in which we're invited to evolve, to develop, to grow as a soul. So even death itself, we could say, is an ignition of the soul.
Okay. Now, I originally discovered you through my interest in NARM therapy, which you combine with your core embodiment treatment. But can you briefly describe what's special about NARM? What's different about NARM therapy compared to, let's say, cognitive behavioral therapy?
Yeah. I think a lot of people would understand NARM through the lens of maybe being more familiar with somatic experiencing that Stephen Levine also developed. And the way NARM came into being was that one of Stephen's main teachers, Lawrence Heller, was a teacher of somatic experiencing. And over time, he started to see that there was actually a distinction between how you treat shock trauma as compared to developmental trauma. So somatic experiencing is more about addressing shock traumas. And NARM is really a body of work involved with addressing developmental trauma, which has more to do with identity formation and really our capacity to connect or disconnect. And so Lawrence Heller kind of coined this term that, you know, our greatest longing is for connection, and it's also our greatest fear. So the body of work of NARM is really, I think what's unique about it is that it's all about supporting people in present time and accessing your resources in present time and connecting with your latent innate capacities, which he calls core needs. So we have these developmental core needs. And the whole body of work goes into really what I think of as like the ideal blueprint design for the human system when those needs are relatively met by our early environments. And then what happens in the distortions of our life force and the distortions of our identity when those needs are not met so well. And so that gives rise to these survival styles.
Right. Yeah, I found that fascinating, the survival styles and the relationship between them and developmental needs or developmental stages that people might be in. And, you know, why don't we speak to that? What do you have to say about developmental needs, what they are, the original design when they're met, and what occurs when they're not met?
Well, if you like, I could just walk us through kind of a brief path of that journey, if you like, the developmental journey of the actual blueprint design. So our original needs in utero and in the first year of life, and of course ongoingly, but sort of the way that this is staged, is we originally have the need for connection. And really that arrives through our parents wanting us, a sense of if you are a pregnancy that was actually planned for or excited about or well received, you know, there's a feeling in the field of excitement and that you were wanted. When little beings are born in circumstances or even in utero in circumstances where there's a lot of ambivalence, or the parents are dissociated or dealing with great challenge, let's say born in a time of war or, you know, a lot of collective upheaval, that connection might be experienced as just not present, right? We don't feel like we matter. And so this first need for connection really gives us a sense of I matter. I'm here. I'm literally in the matter. And so beings who have the connection survival style coping mechanism tend to be very dissociative and actually feel like they don't matter and want to be invisible. And that may have been their actual coping mechanism, was to try to be invisible.
Right. And they're dealing with that maybe for their entire life. But there is hope, right?
Yes. I mean, the work is all about how we can start to reconnect through staying in the body, through sensation, connect with our emotional selves, and connect with this need, actually. And if this connection need is met well, I'll just kind of play with both sides of it. Then we grow into a healthy sense of attunement. That's the next need that comes online. So after birth and the first couple of years of life, our need for attunement comes through our early environment, our caregivers' capacity to recognize that we have the need to have our diaper changed, or we're hungry, or we need to be held, or it gives us the sense that our needs matter and that we are significant, right? And so little being...
And that somebody's paying attention.
Right. And so that's part of what arises as a felt sense of I matter, I'm significant, my needs matter. So people who have some kind of rupture or distortion around that time period tend to become people who are really good at attuning to other people's needs and tend to have a sense of denying their own or a disconnection from their own or that their own don't matter. So you see this a lot of times with actual therapists or people who play those caregiver roles, because it was a kind of a coping mechanism to deal with that miss in their own attunement.
Yeah.
Let's just say we had a somewhat healthy meeting of our needs for connection and attunement. The next need that comes online is the need for trust. We develop a healthy sense of trust in our inner world, as well as the capacity to relate with the outer world, when those early needs for connection and attunement are relatively met. We trust ourselves. We have a growing relationship of trust with others. Again, if those early needs are not met well, we may have a distortion in our capacity to trust ourselves. And this, for a lot of people, can be where we have a kind of a splitting or a leaving our inner knowing, our inner intelligence, to try to perform or present what we think we need to be to maintain connection with our environment.
Right. Yeah, I think I have some issues on that one, but I want to outgrow it. So what's the next stage for me?
So the next developmental stage is called autonomy. And you can imagine around the age, it starts around the age of 2 years old, where if those earlier needs were relatively met well, nobody's going to have a perfect, you know, childhood in that way, but if they were relatively met well, then you start to see this natural way that children around that age want to start to individuate. They want to express more freedom. They're more exploring because they have a relatively secure attachment that they know they can come back to. And so this need for autonomy, for self-expression, for individuation. And, you know, I see this part of the developmental stage really as, in a way, what we're dealing with in the collective. It's a kind of arrested development, I think, that we're seeing being played out collectively, because for many of us, we didn't get those early connection, attunement, trust needs met very well. And so we're very insecure about leaving, about individuating, and we're kind of stuck in a bit of a frozen, arrested development, I think, collectively, in terms of expressing our sovereignty. And right. So you can see this playing out in more codependency, the tendency to spiritually bypass, to you know, be involved with addictions of all kind.
Or cults, for that matter.
Cults. We're more vulnerable to anything or anything, anyone that might promise, even if it's a pseudo feeling of connection.
Right.
You know, we're so vulnerable to still trying to get those needs met.
Right. Now, you talk about a concept called the pace of presence, and where you say the transformation happens at the pace the nervous system can trust. You know, I think this is an important topic, because a lot of people are going to put themselves under a lot of pressure to move faster or to make more progress or be perfectionistic about it. Can you explain why pacing is actually more important than intensity when it comes to integration?
Yeah, I can say, you know, from my own direct experience, that term I coined, living from the pace of presence, really came for me as a recognition that a lot of my own struggles in being in the world seem to arise from this feeling of pressure, so kind of a survival pressure. And right. Now I've come to recognize this as a frequency. It's almost like a default nervous system mode that I think collectively we're very entrained with, especially in Western culture, where, again, you know, back to identity formation, our sense of identity as Western people, a lot of the conditioning is around performance and success and right. accomplishment, right? And so we actually praise a kind of speed. Right. The more you can get done, the better in a day. The more you can accomplish in a year, the more you can accomplish. It's all about accomplishment and external presentation and accolades around, you know, what we have, what we perceive as success. And so for a lot of people, they may actually be, quote, successful, but there may be a cost in that they had to kind of self-betray their own humanity, their own nervous system wisdom. And so we see a lot of breakdown in terms of burnout, in terms of health issues, in terms of incapacity to have intimate, fulfilling relationships. So I think that it's really, in these times, I think a lot more people are waking up to this, that there's been a cost to their success. And there's a desire and a longing to have a more integrated life where we actually have more balance. And a recognition that fulfillment isn't just about what you've done or what you've accomplished. There's so many classic examples of, quote, successful people who actually feel very empty on the inside.
Let's talk about Eros, because that's a very interesting topic that you write about and teach about. Eros as developmental energy. You speak about it as not just being about sexuality, but as a developmental life force. So how does Eros participate in healing and awakening?
It's a great question. Thank you. Well, I like to, you know, I think a lot of my work is about supporting people to reclaim an intimate relationship with their own Eros. That's really just the Eros of being alive. You know, we can feel erotic energy just in watching a sunset, our own touch, in petting a cat. You know, there's so many different ways we can have an intimate meeting with our moment. Or with in a relational field that may not be sexual, it may be sensual. So in core embodiment and part of my background with Continuum, we recognize that Eros is really like an original frequency of what is nourishing. So there's an intelligence in our system that knows that we are designed to move towards what is nourishing for us and to move away what's not. This is very organismic, right? It's like you walk into an area where there's a lot of people smoking cigarettes or whatever, and it's like, you know, the system has a contraction. Or you walk into an environment where there's some kind of toxin that's being produced in the air. Or ideally, that same intelligence is supposed to guide us into what's in right relationship with other beings. You know, what's toxic for us? What's nourishing for us? So for a lot of us, back to those developmental needs, we didn't completely finish the whole lineup. One of them is called love sexuality, and it has to do with our hearts being open and connected to our sexuality and being able to have, you know, a loving relationship that's also a sexual relationship. But it also is referring to what I'm speaking of, our capacity to recognize what is nourishing and to move in a way, to make choices in a way that are cultivating that more erotic or nourishing quality in our lives. And to be able to discern in that way and have boundaries that are healthy for us. Like, what's a yes for us? What do I want to move towards? What's a no for us? And so part right. of the practices that I teach are really about reclaiming, reigniting an experience of this erotic, nourishing quality, the felt sense of it in our own bodies before we share it with anyone else. It's something we can reclaim. And it's actually very healing. You know, part of the practice spaces that I share with people is, you know, I'll often invite people to find a place in the body where there's density or pain or numbness or maybe an old injury. And we can literally bring our attention, our touch, particular vibratory sounds, and we can go and intimately connect with this area. A lot of times people's ongoing pain or dysfunction is literally just that they're disconnected from it, and they're objectifying it. And maybe they're looking outside for who can help me or what's the, you know, the cure, when really we have the capacity in ourselves to meet ourselves and to become more intimate with what this place is symptomizing. And often we can shift the inner climate in which it's taking place, where there might be judgment or shame or repressed anger or some kind of emotional charge that hasn't been met, that's actually keeping the pain in the body locked in. And so wow. Eros and what I'm describing is part of creating a healing space, creating a healing environment that feels safe for the nervous system to drop below that sort of vigilance and defendedness and disconnection, and start to become more connected and involved with what's actually happening.
That's so beautiful. And there's so much more that I want to talk to you about, but we are completely out of time, and I don't even have time to ask you to give our audience any advice. So I'm going to give them some advice, which is to go to your website and check out your work and your events that are coming up, which are fascinating. And all of that can be learned on your website. But I want to thank you so much for being with us today, Ajaya. You're awesome.
Oh, thank you, Paulo. Thank you so much for this opportunity to share and to be with you. And thank you for your beautiful questions and presence with me.
You're welcome. And I want to be sure to tell our listeners about your website, which is ajayasommers.com. That's your name, ajayasommers.com. And for those who may be listening to Pathways Live on a Sunday morning and tuned in late, this is your host, Paul O'Brien. So glad you're with us today. Please note that you have the ability to review hundreds of interviews in our online archive at divination.com. That's spelled divination.com. And you can play and or share this program whenever you want via the internet or as a free podcast, and I'll tell you how in a minute. Today we've been visiting with Ajaya Sommers, the founder of Core Embodiment, a psycho-spiritual somatic methodology. And I want to say a heartfelt thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in to Pathways, which is currently broadcast on KBOO-FM in Portland, Oregon. You can get a free subscription to our podcast, which you can also find at divination.com, or by searching Pathways Radio on Paulo's YouTube channel, where you can give us a thumbs up and subscribe. And in any case, please feel free to forward a link to this conversation to your friends. Well, this is Paulo bidding you adieu and reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Podcasts. And thanks again to Ajaya Sommers and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Every Tuesday night, Cubby Cushy Cubby Cush blasts forth from the KBOO studios. 2 hours of global bass centering South Asia and the South Asian diaspora, with an even tighter focus.